Hello everyone, thank you for joining our webinar today. My name is Justin Warner and I will be today's host. Our discussion today will be centered around the employee lifecycle surveys with a special focus on exit and onboarding surveys. I'm joined today by Dave Long, Vice President of Assessments, and Christian Nelson, Vice President of Consulting here at DecisionWise. Guys, I'm really glad I was able to get the big guns here, so thanks.
Oh, boy.
Thanks for being with us. Our webinar today qualifies for 1 hour of both SHRM and HRCI General HR credits. Later this afternoon, we will email out the code to all of those who complete the webinar. For those of you who will be watching this webinar on demand and would like to receive the code following the completion of the webinar, please email us at info@decisionwise.com to receive those codes. So again, that email is info@decisionwise.com, and we will send out those codes to you. This webinar and all other webinars that DecisionWise has put out are available to watch on demand through our BrightTalk channel. Today, we will be using a slide deck, and we will not be sharing this slide deck following the webinar. However, you are welcome to refer to this webinar on demand as frequently as you would like. We also welcome your questions. And on the BrightTalk screen, you'll notice a chat feature, a question area. Please use that to ask any questions, and we will do our very best to answer those questions as we go throughout the webinar. Should we have time at the end, and if there are any lingering questions, we'll address those at the very end of our webinar. So guys, now that we've gotten all that out of the way, let's go ahead and get started with the onboarding and exit surveys, also called life cycle surveys, as we discuss those. So Christian, why don't I kick this over to you, and maybe you just kind of talk through what we want to accomplish today, where we want to see this see us go.
Yeah, and we're very excited to be here talking about this life cycle surveys today. One point of clarification, we initially designed or intended to talk about both onboarding and exit surveys in this presentation. We found out we had so much to say that we're going to break that into two different webinars. That said, so today's conversation will largely focus on onboarding. But I know if we have folks on the phone that specifically want to talk about exit, we're happy to field questions about that as well. And we want to dedicate one of these sessions to exit surveys specifically. Great. In the future. So just that point of clarification. Where we're headed today, we're going to talk about why lifecycle surveys. Why do we want to measure employee perceptions around lifecycle events? And also, what are lifecycle events? We'll touch on that. We're going to talk about DecisionWise onboarding survey methodology, which is largely based around measuring onboarding process as well as onboarding outcomes, and we'll talk about that. And then we'll wrap up the conversation talking about how to interpret your results and what do we do with it. With the perceptions that we get back from these lifecycle surveys. And then, as Justin mentioned, we'll leave time for questions at the end. But please, if you've got questions, enter them into that chat box throughout the presentation. And if we like your questions, and especially if we know the answer to your questions, we'll respond to it. No, we'll try to respond to as many as we can, given time. So with that, let's jump right into our first question. Why life cycle surveys? Why do we want to measure around life cycle surveys? So DecisionWise, we are experts in employee feedback, and specifically around employee engagement. We do a lot of great work around 360s and coaching and leveraging employee feedback to improve an organization at different levels. But ultimately, our specialty is how do we engage employees? How do we create environments in which employees choose to engage? And understanding life cycle events is a key component in creating an employee experience that's complete and invites employees to engage with your organizational experience. So when we talk about life cycle events, I think it's helpful for us to talk about what we call moments of truth. we think about the employee experience, when we work as a, as an employee at an organization, my experience is made up of countless moments of truth. These events we might call moments of truth, and we'll address what that means. But these moments add up to our total experience with an organization and how we perceive that. And also, that's what shapes whether we choose to engage in that. How much of myself do I want to bring to the role? Do I want to bring more of my discretionary effort? Do I want to bring my best ideas? Those types of things. So understanding these moments of truth is key to building a very strategic and engaging employee experience.
And you might say your employment or your time with an organization is a collection of all moments that you've had, but not every moment is a moment of truth, and not every moment can be planned. And so we kind of break up moments of truth into two different categories. One category we call Kairos moments. Kairos is a term from anthropology that is roughly translated from the Greek as the right moment. And how we might describe Kairos moments would be moments of truth that are inherently unpredictable. We don't know when they're going to happen, but we do know that they are going to happen. They are important moments in the life cycle of an employee with your organization that will largely help them determine, number one, do they even want to stay there? And number two, they're going to help determine whether or not they're going to engage in the organization. When you handle the moments of truth appropriately, then you really can build a better experience for your employees. Now, between the hire date and the exit date, we don't know when these are going to happen. It's kind of at random. As you can see, our timeline is a little mixed up there. And so what kinds of events would be considered Kairos moments? If there's a conflict in the workplace, or if there's a period where somebody has heavy workload, how does the organization respond and support that person? When somebody fails, or when there's a reduction in force that happens, how's the organization responding to that? We receive a customer complaint about one of our employees, and it goes on and on. If you have a lifestyle change, you're getting married or you're having a baby, you know, these sorts of things, they're not really planned events, and they're not things that are on a set timeline. And so the way we deal with Kairos moments is making sure that our managers, our leadership, and our culture is geared to make sure that we handle these things appropriately. There are some of these things that you can write policies for as they come up. But for the most part, we just need to have people with the right skill sets and the right competencies in order to address these situations in the way that you're building your culture and your employees' experience in a very positive way.
Right. And we'll talk about those planned moments in a bit. But these Kairos moments, these unplanned events, you really have to approach these through strengthening the culture, as Dave mentioned, guiding principles, creating an environment where managers are going to be able to navigate the ambiguity of some of these unplanned events. So let's say an employee has a health crisis with a child, and suddenly they need to have some additional flexibility or a different level of empathy and understanding from their coworkers. That's very hard to write into a policy and to legislate, but some of these things have to be shaped by the culture and influenced and celebrated in stories of success and things like that. A lot of this will be added up and captured in the sentiments that you might capture in an exit survey. But we're going to move forward and talk about another key area for understanding the employee experience and life cycle. We'll move from those unplanned to the planned moments. Now, the Greeks had two ways of talking about time: Kairos, which were kind of the opportune moment, and then Chronos, the sequential or chronological time. And that's what we're looking here. And this is what really ties into this conversation for planned life cycle events and life cycle surveys.
So you can see that the timeline that we're providing on the Kairos moments is a little bit more linear than the Kairos moments. Yeah. And so we know we can predict when these things are going to happen. And so some possible Kronos moments that we know when they're going to happen and can plan for them, date of hire, the onboarding process, which we're talking about today, training, raises and bonuses, and all the way till they exit the organization. These are things that can generally be planned for. And the nice thing about this is that when we have moments that we know, rites of passages that we know every employee passes through, then we can plan for them, and we can design a process and measure that process in terms of how closely are we following it and how effective was the process. We can do all those things with the Chronos moments that are a little bit harder to do with the Kairos moments, because the Kairos moments are by nature very unpredictable.
Right. Guys, we get a lot of questions about, you know, the employee experience is the buzzword. And what does that employee experience look like? Here at DecisionWise, we do a lot around employee engagement and the whole employee experience. Will you just take a second and talk about the employee experience and how these moments of truth really define that experience that the employees are having, and how that's different than engagement per se?
Yeah, so there's a few ways to think about it. One is the experience we're creating is basically the invitation we're providing to employees. Everything we do, invitation to for them to engage. I like to tell leadership teams, we can't build employee engagement directly. All we can do is build the most compelling invitation possible for them to engage. And a big way we do that is in the experience we create. And so, and it gets even more complex, because we as HR leaders or executives or managers have influence over certain spheres. We don't control the whole picture. Every day, every employee comes to work and co-creates the experience of working at an organization. That said, we have a lot of influence over these Chronos and, to a certain extent, Kairos moments, mm-hmm. That we can create that compelling invitation
there
to engage.
There are more than these moments that go into the employee experience, but what we're doing is identifying leverage points. We know the first few weeks or months that an employee spends with an organization are very important to how that person is going to view their organization going forward. So there's really no excuse at this point, you know, if you know you're going to be onboarding employees along the way, that you wouldn't have some onboarding process to bring them on, to get them up to speed so that they understand how to do their work, but also to get them bought into the organization. Yeah. We need to design our processes in order to do that, because inevitably we know we're going to be hiring people and onboarding them into the organization.
And I think the slide that we have shown right now is a really great kind of illustration of every, and this isn't a complete list, and it differs a bit for different industries, different organizations, of course, but this is a nice general illustration to talk about. As an HR leader, or a leader at any level in the organization, you can look at these planned events and say, what experience are we creating at each of these events, and is it the right experience? And I think that's at the heart of what makes lifecycle surveys so powerful. It helps us understand what experience are we creating, and are we getting the outcomes that we're looking for? And it's a metric to inform that conversation. That's just a nice introduction to what kind of the background of employee experience. We know there's unplanned moments. We know there's planned moments. We want to focus specifically on that onboarding experience. So much depends on the tone and experience that is created for an employee as they join your organization. That really sets them up on a path and a trajectory within your organization. So we want to understand it and make sure we're doing it the right way.
And Christian, as we work with organizations, this is a very common topic that comes up. And specifically, not really as much with leaders, but just with employees from all levels of the organization. When we bring them together, we do planning sessions or focus groups, and we really talk about their experience. Those employees talk about the onboarding process, not just for themselves, and some of them have been there for 20 years, they can't even remember their onboarding experience, but for the coworkers that are coming and joining them. So we know this is a point of concern for a lot of employees out there, because as we work with organizations, we know the onboarding programs that the organizations we work with need some work in order to not only get people up to speed, but also get them excited about working for that organization.
Exactly. And I think it becomes even more important as we understand younger generations and their expectations as they enter the workforce. If we think about kind of a modern employee, especially those coming directly out of college or leaving high school, entering the workforce for the first time, these generations grew up in a world where experience management was just a part of their life, where as consumers, experiences were carefully managed, increasingly more so, as well as their access to feedback. So if they don't like something, they can very quickly and very publicly let people know.
For better or worse.
For better or worse, they can say, hey, this is great, or quite the opposite. And so, we, you know, if you think through Yelp and or just social media and just how quickly we can get our opinions out on an experience that we've had somewhere, it becomes even more important for us as employers, as people that are managing a workplace environment, to make sure that we're creating a deliberately strategic experience for these folks.
And not to mention targeted sites like Glassdoor.
Yeah, Glassdoor. Yeah,
Glassdoor is one of those places where they can give their feedback right away.
Yes, definitely. So let's talk about some methodology for onboarding. And specifically, we're going to show you the approach that we've developed here. Now, I'll say this. You know, our history is deep in employee engagement and 360 feedback. And throughout the years, we've done different versions of onboarding surveys. And we've done some really great ones. We've partnered with our clients, and we still do that. But a while ago, we stepped back and said, okay, if we're going to incorporate everything we know about employee engagement, driving that, everything we know from just the expertise of our consultants working with different organizations, and come up with our own take on how to appropriately do onboarding surveys, how would we approach that? And this is what we're talking about today, how we've refined that, and I think we've got an interesting take on this.
We're trying to simplify our approach a little bit, and we're gonna communicate that here.
Exactly.
So with onboarding surveys, we're really concerned with two things. Number one, we're concerned with the process that we're taking. So from the day, the minute that an employee walks through your door, or even before that employee walks through your door, you have a process for dealing with that employee. Now, some of you have a very rigid process and a very, like a checklist or even a mapped out first 10, 15, 30 days, whatever it might be. Some of you will have a very strict process that you want people to follow, and others of you have a very loose process. Either way, you're onboarding people. And so you have a process, whether that's being followed or not, we don't know, but we do want to know, what are we doing in the process? So we want to make sure that if we do have a process, or if there are elements that you're trying to incorporate in the first few weeks that an employee is there, that those elements are being executed. So that's one of the things that we want to understand from our onboarding survey. Do we have a process that is being utilized right now? The second thing that we want to know is, how is it working? We have a process. Do we have the right outcomes from the process? So the way that we're going to look at our onboarding surveys is to say, let's measure, make sure that the process is being followed. And the second thing is, are we getting the outcomes that we want to get by following that process?
So let's explore a little bit about this process. What are we doing for onboarding? Now, this is the part that we customize to the greatest extent for our we'll show you the outcome piece in a moment. But for the process piece, that's going to be very unique for each organization. There'll be some common building blocks, and we've got questions we can draw from. But this is a portion that we would customize to make sure we've dialed in the process specifically for an organization. So the steps or stages that new employees are expected to experience during onboarding. Survey items should be answered with a yes or a no. We want to know, are these events happening? So one, we want to know what are the steps in your process? And then two, how consistently or how well are they being observed? And this is going to be useful information in the reporting stage. Perhaps some of your managers are great at implementing onboarding, following the process. Perhaps others aren't so great. And then we can ultimately look at, are we getting different outcomes from these different areas of the business? Survey items should be answered yes or no. Our approach actually gives us three possible outcomes. Yes, this event is happening formally. Let's say, for example, my manager met with me to talk about my growth goals. If that was an onboarding element in your process, that could happen formally. It could also happen informally, and that's useful information. And then we have no, that did not happen. And so our survey around process, that's the scale we use for this portion of the survey.
I'd like to just add here, as we've worked with organizations in defining their process, you know, some of them have a very small process. Some of them have a much larger process. Either way, this is a really good time for you to sort of, you know, in the design of the survey, you can kind of define what you want your process to be. If you say, well, I don't think we've ever set the expectation that managers have a growth conversation in the first 90 days with their employees, then this is a really good time to set that expectation. You're putting it into a survey. You can communicate to your managers, hey, we're going to be doing a survey of all new employees. Here are the things we're going to be asking them that they're doing. And so as a manager, you want to make sure that you hit all of these points. So it's a really good time to set the expectation of what you want to happen in your onboarding process.
Yeah. Guys, this might be a silly question, but with the process, is it important that the process is the same across the organization? Or is it okay if one manager does it different than another manager?
Well, I think it can be it can vary across the organization, but it should vary by design and not vary just because one manager opts out of something. For example, if you have an organization that has a large manufacturing population, that onboarding process might be different than, let's say, the back office onboarding approach. Mm-hmm. But a manager within manufacturing should hold at least, you know, we don't want to take out the manager's style and authenticity completely, but they should adhere to the process as closely as possible to create some consistency of experience for those employees.
And I would add to that that, sure, there are different jobs. And so yeah, the training for different jobs will be different inherently. However, the process of normalizing somebody or assimilating somebody into the organization to where they can, at the end of this process, say, hey, I really fit in here. I'm really comfortable in this culture. That should be pretty similar, pretty consistent across the organization. If not, the ones that are having a really good experience, or let's put it this way, the ones that are having a really bad onboarding experience, we'll see the ones across the way that are having a really good onboarding experience, and they say, why don't you care enough about me to give me that same experience? So yeah, sure, the job training, things like that can differ, but there's some milestones that I think everybody wants to hit.
Now, Dave, you talked about for those who don't necessarily have a structured process,
right,
that this could be a way to get that structure going. If somebody's trying to get it going right now, would you say get a structure in place and wait to start surveying, or is it something that can happen immediately? We can do them both together.
I think you can actually, you can inform the design by, let's say we haven't done anything yet by deliberately around onboarding. We can create a survey that's broad enough that you can say, well, let's understand what's working where and say, okay, and well, we see some positive outcomes in this part of our business. We see that also the data will tell us, for example, these managers are having those growth conversations. That tells you, great, I'm going to make that part of my formal process. You can do a little bit of kind of use this as a pre-work to inform the design.
If you have a process that you're already completely comfortable with right now, then there's not really a reason to keep following up on it. In fact, this survey process is helping us dial in your onboarding process,
yeah,
right? So we want to start somewhere, and I'd say we start wherever you are. There are some things that you would expect that just generally everybody would expect. Everybody would have this experience as part of their onboarding. Just put that in there. Like, just to be able to sit down with your manager and talk, doesn't matter what you're talking about, is that happening? Well, we would expect that would happen in just about every onboarding experience. So put that in there. Make sure that that's part of the initial design, great, even if it's really loose.
Great. So just giving a kind of a preview. Now, this is not a complete survey, but this is just a sense, and I hope this is showing up large enough on your screens. I'll single out a couple of the items here. This is what this portion of the survey looks like for us at DecisionWise. We don't have an elephant on every survey. This is our sample company, which we're providing just kind of a preview of what this might look like. But here's an actual survey an employee would receive. And our recommendation is that they'd receive this at 90 days within your organization. Now, our setup is a portal that HR has. You just enter their name and a few demographics as well as their start date, and the system automatically sends them a survey 90 days out. Now we can tailor that date and all that's customizable, but that's how it's initiated. This is what they would actually see, some version of this. The process piece would be a little bit longer, but for example, you see, I was given a list of names and contact information of important people within my company, and they can answer yes, that happened formally, yes, that happened informally, or no, that didn't happen. And that's really, we're trying to keep it very simple, a nice clean experience for the employee taking this, but that's what this portion of the process measurement looks like. And then we'll show you the reporting component, what the output is, in a moment.
Christian, talk about the time for just a minute. So you said this is often something we do best practice at 90 days. Yeah.
I hear a lot of people say, well, I want to do this within 30 days. Or, you know, why do we recommend 90 days? And then what about following up after that, you know, at 6 months or something in that line?
So it's a really great question. There are, of course, exceptions. For example, if I had a client come to me and say, we're losing people at 45 days, then we say, okay, well, let's design a different system. But for most organizations, this 90 days is a real nice sweet spot for they've been there long enough. It's fair for them to place the expectation that a manager would have checked most of those milestones for the onboarding experience. Most of those things should have happened at 90 days, as well as they've been there long enough to start to form some opinions. The initial glow of those first 3 days has worn off. And so it's a nice balance of let's get them early enough that it's close enough to these events, but not far enough that it's too far. And it's also, you know, there's other approaches. Hey, we're going to send a survey at 15 days, 30 days, 45. We don't want to over-survey them. We want to capture their insights the right way one time, as well as that data becomes a lot more unwieldy if we've got sequential data at all those different moments. We're measuring the same questions every 15 days. We're looking for a snapshot that's going to give us actionable, meaningful information without overwhelming the employee or our HR business partners.
I'll add to that, you know, if you wait too long to do the survey, there's some specific things that we're asking in the onboarding survey around process. It's going to be hard at 6 months or a year for people to really remember if those things happened.
Right. Now in certain cases, I don't out of the gate recommend, hey, as a standard rule, let's do a 6 month follow-up or anything like that. But in certain cases, once we say, let's talk about your organizational needs. And for example, there might be situations where there's another key lifecycle event that we would want to follow up on or something like that. Or perhaps we run the survey for 6 months and we get some interesting information that, okay, we need to follow up on this particular question about, tools and resources at a key milestone. But that's more shaped by the survey, less of a general recommendation. Yeah, good question.
So we've been talking a lot about the process. How do we measure the process? How do we lay out the process? Even if you follow that process perfectly, we're not necessarily saying that the process was effective.
Right.
And so in addition to measuring, are we following the process, we also want to have a component of the survey that says, are we getting the right outcomes? Another way to say that is, how is this process working? So with regard to outcomes, we are essentially wanting to know, has our process been effective? And so we are going to ask outcome questions that really address two different questions. Number one, did our survey create enablement? Are our employees enabled to do their jobs? Or in other words, do they have the tools, resources, abilities, skills that they need in order to do their jobs at the 90-day point?
Which is, I think, is interesting. This is one of my favorite parts of the way we're laying this out, is we're addressing this from two angles, and you'll speak to the other in a moment. But most traditional onboarding places a heavy emphasis on this, and understandably so. We want to limit that or reduce that or shorten that productivity curve. We get someone new in, they don't know which way is up. Let's show them what the job is, get them the tools, the training, and have them adding value as soon as possible. And so we want to measure that. We want to understand that. But we don't want to stop there. We don't want to stop at, are we enabling them to do their job? We want to go further, and that's this other component.
Right. And the other component would be, do they want to do their jobs? Right. That's the engagement side. And it goes beyond, of course, just wanting to do their jobs. We want to know, not only are they motivated, we want to know, do they feel aligned with the organization? Do they feel bought into where we're going as a company? Do they feel like they belong here? Do they feel connected to the organization? Do they have a certain amount of understanding of the purpose of their work,
right,
and how their work is tying to the goals and the success of the organization?
So an effective onboarding program should bring an employee in, help them get up to speed, equip them to do their job to where they can say, I can do this job now, as well as that invitation I was mentioning before. We should create an experience that helps them feel Like, yes, I want to bring more of my best self to this work. I am excited to bring more of my ideas, my energy, and to do this to a great extent. And that's where that engagement piece is part of this. So a complete strategy would address both of those.
Talking about engagement, Christian, how important is the onboarding process, these outcomes that we're talking about, in the overall engagement of an employee? Like, it seems like if they get off on the right foot, that their levels of engagement will be much higher down the road because they've had a consistent experience.
Yeah.
They understand the expectation. There's not misalignment with those expectations. Maybe talk about that a little bit.
So we do employee engagement surveys with hundreds and hundreds of organizations. Dave and I each have worked with hundreds of organizations to measure and consult around employee engagement. And one of the things we do is we cut engagement levels by tenure. So we group employees into four categories of engagement: fully engaged, engaged, key opportunity group, and then fully disengaged. And what always surprises me is when we look at an organization and we look at a tenure engagement by tenure, and less than 1 year, we have fully disengaged employees. Now, I'll tell you this, everyone, and this would probably track with what you might expect, there's always a honeymoon period. We're always excited when we get to a new organization. What we want to do is lean into that and use that positive energy and sustain it as long as possible. We don't want it to be like, you know, when we cut it by tenure, we see disengagement even under a year, and then that continues to grow. We want to start out as strong as possible and keep that positive energy going. And it doesn't happen just by accident. We see a number of organizations where even within a year of the organization, or less than a year, people have chosen to disengage from the organization.
Yeah, and I would say don't mistake that energy that you get from new employees that first couple of weeks or month that they're there. They have energy. They have excitement for being there. Don't mistake that with we must have a good onboarding process, mm-hmm. right? Because that doesn't mean you have a good onboarding process. It means that you are hiring human beings that are excited when they get into a new job.
Right.
So
they might just be happy to be out of their old job.
They're probably that's probably a component of that. So this is really what we're talking about is you know, are we setting us up for the long term here, or are we just riffing off of that new employee enthusiasm, right? We're really trying to build for the long term here so that when we do, and there's a question, you know, that said, do follow-up surveys at 3 to 6 months after we've done an onboarding survey? Yes, they're called engagement surveys. So they do get surveyed again, and they're in the engagement survey, and some of the same questions that we're asking in the onboarding question survey, we're asking again of those same
survey. That's a really great
right
point.
So we're survey. And we can sort that engagement survey by tenure, so we can know people who've been here for a year, how are they doing now after we've seen them in the onboarding process.
So knowing that we're looking at, are we building enablement and as well as engagement within our onboarding process, just here's a sample of some of those questions. We've made it even smaller and more difficult to read here, but hopefully I'll just point out what some of these say. Now, a couple points on this. To create the measurements of outcomes, at least in the instrument that we use, that we've designed, we incorporate questions from our standard engagement survey. We did that because they've been proven for 20 years working with these different organizations. And we have deep benchmarks. We've refined these. And so we've measured them with the lens of, okay, we're now looking at an onboarding-only audience. Which are the ones that are going to be most relevant for enablement and engagement? We've added a couple others to the mix. We can customize this as well for different organizations. But we also go back to a different scale. For example, here's a great enablement question. I have the tools and resources I need to do my job well. And the scale throughout this section is from strongly disagree to strongly agree. That tells us very quickly if they feel like they've got tools to do their job.
And it's an outcome question.
It's an outcome. Did they have things happen, whether formally or informally, in the onboarding experience that they now have the tools and resources to do their job? I've received the training. We also go beyond that in terms of, you'll see, for example, overall, I love my job. Now, that's an interesting question, and it's an early time to ask that. 90 days in, do you love your job? If we're creating an engaging environment, they will. If we're creating the right experiences in those first 90 days, they will answer agree or strongly agree to that statement.
Love my job seems like a high standard, and we put it as a high standard for a reason. We want people as a result of the work they're doing and our onboarding process to really feel like, hey, I fit in here. I love doing this work.
Now, this is just kind of a sample of some of those questions. We'd have others in there that would tie into, are we creating experiences for employees to find those elements that we see driving engagement, meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection to an appropriate degree within their 90 days, these things that we see our research has indicated lead to engagement. But you get a feel for kind of just that user experience with what we're seeing here. You'll also notice that we do include open-ended questions. Here we've got two. What has helped you the most during your first 90 days with your organization? If you're trying to refine a process, it's great to get this data in their own words. What are the elements that were most helpful in your first 90 days? What would have made your first 90 days even better? And so we want to capture that qualitative data as well. So one question just came in. It looks like, how are these surveys different from standard employee exit interviews? So one, we're talking specifically about onboarding. But we can speak to the exit piece too, because we've got a really great product there, and we're big believers in the power of exit surveys. One of the ways that those are different than interviews are we can drive more consistency and have more quantitative data to use. And we take out some of the human variability. It also is function or mode of use. It's much more flexible. They can take it on their phone. They don't necessarily need to be in an office with HR. Sometimes the volumes that a single HR BP supports make it difficult to reach everyone, geographies, things like that.
It's easier to put your honest responses into a survey rather than saying it face to face with another human being.
Exactly. The other piece, I think this is actually a great segue into where we're headed next, is the reporting. All of the survey data goes into a very powerful survey exploration or data exploration tool. And it makes it much more usable than having to you know, type notes into a spreadsheet and try to sum those up
and really get insights from that.
Exactly. And we have some clients that they incorporate both. They want that human touch point. Mm-hmm. And for example, we have some clients that say, hey, let's have our interview. And then we've set up a portal for them so they can initiate a survey on an iPad. And they, at part of the interview, they give them the iPad to take the survey right there, or, you know, things like that. So there's a variety of approaches.
Exit interviews can yield very rich discussions. Yeah. And so I wouldn't necessarily, if you enjoy doing exit interviews, if that's a part of your process, I wouldn't necessarily say stop doing that. I would just say add this component so you can quantify a little more, the experience of those people leaving the organization.
Exactly. Great question. Let's look at how we interpret the results, and we've included a few screenshots from our reporting tool just to kind of paint a picture. But some of you, some of the folks we noticed registered for the organization work with us for engagement surveys, and so you're aware of the online reporting tool that we've created. Well, we've got something similar here. Everything we've got we can look at by underlying demographics. We can cut things by date, so we can see how is your the efficacy of your onboarding program evolving over time, and we'll look at that. What you're seeing here is just a screenshot of our reporting tool, and we have the process data on the left. You'll see that from the dark green would show things that happen formally, light green informally, and red not happening at all. We see the outcomes on the right. And this is a summary view, so this is kind of current state of the culmination. You can also filter this by date. Show me just the data from October. Show me just the data from October to December, a range and things like that.
By different groups in the organization, different demographics.
Right, depending how you set it up, you can say, I just want to see how we're onboarding managers or gender. Any of those demographics you're comfortable with, and the employee themselves wouldn't enter that. HR would, as they initiate these things, add that. So
And it's important that I note that we're looking at these two things in the summary page. We're looking at them side by side. So on the left, we have a process. Has it been effectively implemented? Are people running the process? Are they doing it formally? Are they doing it informally? And on the right, we're looking at right next to each other. Is the process getting us the outcomes that we're looking for?
Right.
So we're looking at process and outcomes together so we understand, okay, we're following a process and the outcomes are or are not leading to what we need.
Yep. We can go further, and there's several cuts. We're just going to highlight a couple that we think are interesting for just an introduction to this. Let's look at the survey process, the process results in isolation. Right here, what we're looking at is a time sequence. So you can see how things varied. So for example, my manager set aside time to spend with me. Did that happen in the first 90 days? What we're showing here, the chart shows that we have a stronger score in November. The cohort we brought in, you know, within that time frame that would have been surveyed 90 days in November, were a lot more favorable on that formally happening in November. And so you can track, and this data is takes a little bit to get used to, just the chart, but it tells us, are we heading in the right direction? Are we getting more of our managers or more of the teams observing our process as it's designed?
And if that's something that is important to you, and if it's something that you say, we want this to happen formally, with every new hire, then we can see we're not doing very well, right? Even at our very best, we were only at 50% people having a formal sit down with their manager in the first 90 days. Now, this is obviously dummy data. I would hope that most of you would not see that, but you can see we did a little bit better in November, but we've gotten steadily worse to the point where we're only at about 19% of people now that are having a formal sit down with their manager in the first 90 days.
And especially for large organizations, this becomes very powerful. It becomes very usable to any organization size. But if you think through, let's say we lose, you know, some organizations, you know, could lose 500 people a month or you know, just based on their size or something like that. So suddenly being able to see the data this way and then throw demographics. Well, let's say, are we losing people by generation? Are we losing people are we losing more of our female managers or onboarding less effectively our female managers than our male managers? It gives you the power, depending on how you want to set this up, to make those discoveries and then adjust your process and get the outcomes that you're looking for.
Right. Guys, as organizations look to expand the employee experience, organizations mature, right? They go through different levels of maturity. And one of those levels that we try to help people get from is we want to shift some of these responsibilities from HR to overall management, right? And we want to see managers get more involved in these processes. Can you talk about that just a little bit? I know we don't have anything on our maturity model, but how can this data help HR professionals get management more involved in this onboarding process and really understand the power of people and using people analytics to help drive business decisions?
One of the key things that we're looking at whenever we're transferring ownership from an HR team or from a top leadership team to the rest of the management structure in the organization is setting expectations and holding people accountable to those expectations. So by creating this survey, we're setting an expectation of what the onboarding process is and what outcomes we're expecting from the onboarding process. And now we have feedback in the form of accountability to be able to give to our managers and say, hey, you know, we're expecting these things to happen. We've set this expectation. We know that it's an expectation because it's in the survey. Mm-hmm. And here are the results. We either are doing it well or we're not doing it well. And here's what we need to keep doing, or here's what we need to change. And so that's one way. I mean, it's really hard to transfer ownership of these things unless you have a vehicle through which you can set the expectation and hold them accountable to the expectation. And that's exactly what this is.
Let's look at some of the ways we measure outcomes. So, you know, this is, again, you recall we use a different scale on those outcome measures. We use that 5-point scale. And here is just the same kind of time sequence view of our outcomes. I have access to the information I need to do my job effectively. These are just some sample questions here. I have received the training I need to do my job well. You can see how people are responding to that over time. Are we trending the right direction? Are we maintaining it? And so even if you've gotten a proven approach for onboarding, this is a great way to make sure you're not slipping. Are we keeping these high outcomes, or is an adjustment required to our process to make sure that we're getting some of this, or do we just need to drive greater adherence to our process in different parts of our business?
Guys, can you talk a little bit about confidentiality when it comes to these types of surveys? So with our engagement surveys, we go to high levels to make sure we're maintaining confidentiality. what do we do with confidentiality when it comes to onboarding surveys?
I mean, we treat this very similarly as we do our engagement survey or any other survey that we use. These are people that we're hoping are going to be with our organization for a long time. We don't want to put them in a negative place with their managers, with a negative place with the organization for being honest on a survey. Mm-hmm. And so we still observe confidentiality restrictions. It makes it a little bit more difficult if you're only onboarding one person a month, then we've got to wait 5 months before we have five people that we can give you the collective data for. So this time series reporting can be adjusted so that if you don't want to see it every month, if you need several months to get enough people in there, then you might adjust it to that.
If you're a small organization, you're not losing, five people a month, then you can say, well, let's look at what, quarterly reporting. Right. So it shows up. So everything's adjustable and can be configured for the organization's size. But we do take confidentiality very serious. This isn't something to drive and put in an employee's file specifically. Yeah. It's what experience are we creating and are we okay with this experience? Yeah. Do we need to adjust that?
And to be more complete, exit surveys, we're not as concerned with confidentiality. We want to put those, but we're not as concerned about that because this is a person that's left the organization.
Right? Yeah, and that's more of a conversation. It's a different expectation if they're leaving than if the vulnerability of being within.
And either way, if you're using confidentiality restrictions or you're not, that's part of the communication process with these instruments. If you want people to feel confidential, then we will make it confidential and we will communicate that it's going to be confidential.
Right. The key with confidentiality is one, guaranteeing it when you state it, but also not just communicating if it's not confidential. The employee has to know up front. And that would be more of a conversation on the exit than onboarding. We wouldn't have as much leeway on that.
We talked about one of the outcomes that we want is engagement. And we have in our standard onboarding survey, we have measures to determine whether somebody is engaged or what we might call less engaged. And engaged, we use kind of some of the traditional measures that we have always used in measuring engagement to understand, is this person bought in? Is this person enjoying their work? Is this person feeling like they can stay here for a long time? We use some of those traditional measures in order to determine or classify each person that comes through this survey process as engaged or less engaged. What we don't do is to classify people as completely disengaged at this early stage. They've only been there for 90 days. We don't want to pass complete judgment on anybody, but we want to know, hey, is this person engaged or are they maybe not as engaged as they could be? And we have a cutoff in the middle where we say, at this point, that after this number, average number on these questions, they're at an engaged place, or if they're below that, they're in a less engaged place. But the reason we do this and what this does for us is it helps us to then analyze our data in a more meaningful way. So we're going to look at, and so this is very small, but we'll show you a blown up picture of this here. But what we're looking at is we're seeing, okay, there are two outcomes here on the engagement side. They're either engaged or less engaged, more engaged or less engaged. And we can look at all of the other questions on the survey, including process, but also outcomes. And we've blown up outcomes here to understand, okay, what's the difference between our engaged population and our less engaged? By process and outcome, what are the differences? So we see two key differences, and this is actually real data, two key differences on the second and third ones, which is I have received the training I need to do my job well, and I have the tools and resources I need to do my job well. So it looks like those people that are less engaged are not getting enablement factors. They're not getting training. They're not getting tools that they need in order to do their job. And it looks like they're getting frustrated pretty quickly because they're not getting that.
This is powerful data for conversation. So suddenly you're not just walking around saying, hey, I know instinctively that we need to do more around training and development in some part of the business. We have data here that says when our managers are receiving the training and the tools and resources, or when our employees rather, then they're having a much better, more engaging first 90 days in their organization. It's setting us up. And we've got actual numbers to support it. Now, what's interesting is a lot of times you know these things as HR,
but
you don't know why you know them.
Yeah.
And we're giving you data to support some of the things. And sometimes it's showing that it's even more severe than you might have imagined. But it gives you concrete data to go back to leadership and say, this is what we're working with. This is where we have strategic opportunities to enhance the employee experience, build engagement, grow the organization.
It is very easy for you to look at this data and say, we need to invest more in training and resources early in the employee's experience, because we have a good experience with training and resources, we have engaged people. Where we don't, they are just quickly becoming less engaged. So it's really useful from that standpoint. We can also look at these engaged or less engaged numbers by process and say, you know, is our process leading people to be engaged or less engaged, which is kind of the green and red category that you see kind of a little bit over to the left, and see how do we tweak our process. If our process is not leading people to be engaged, then we know we need to change the process. And so that might mean that at some point, a year into kind of collecting this feedback, you might reevaluate your survey based on this data, based on this feedback, and say, we need to rework our process. We need to put new elements into the survey to understand, okay, so like, if we haven't done enough in the process around training, we need to add process points on training to our survey, start measuring, making sure that's happening in order to get the outcomes that we really want.
We've covered a lot of ground. We've given you a preview and some detail of the DecisionWise methodology around onboarding surveys, and how to measure both process as well as outcomes, including enablement and engagement. We've shown you the reporting tool. We want to kind of wrap up with at least the formal piece here, and we'll do questions in a moment, but with some questions your onboarding survey should answer. Whether you work with DecisionWise, another provider, some things that we've identified that your survey should address. Is your onboarding process being consistently observed? You've got a process or you haven't, but if you've got something in place, are people doing it? And so we want to know, is it happening formally? Is it happening informally? Is it not happening? And you saw how we approach that. Is onboarding enabling employees to do their job? Is our process helping them get up to speed? Are they going to able to be to shorten that productivity gap and actually start contributing to our organization? Is onboarding helping employees to engage? Can they, not only can they do their job, but are they excited to bring more of their best selves to their work? Are they excited to dig in, become part of this organization? And then the last one.
Ultimately, what we want to know, do we have the right onboarding process? We know it's being observed. We can't know if we have the right one if we're not observing the current process. If we're not doing that, we know we need to observe the process better. And then if we are observing the process, but we're not getting the right outcomes, then we can also say we don't have the right onboarding process, and we can change it from there.
One of the things I'll say about this process, well, actually, let me click to this next slide, because I think this sets the stage very nicely before we move into questions. But this great quote from Maya Angelou, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people never forget how you made them feel. Whether we're doing it intentionally or not, we are shaping the way people feel about our organization and the way we onboard them and throughout these lifecycle events. We see the most progressive organizations actively stepping in to understand, measure, and improve these key moments so that they are deliberately creating an experience that is strategic for them, better for the organization, better for the employees. And that's really what we're trying to do here with onboarding and these lifecycle surveys. And I think we've covered a lot of ground. Maybe we'll pause here for some questions.
Christian, actually, I have a question that I want to follow up on with managers again. So that transfer from the HR teams to the managers. We know that engaged managers are more likely to have engaged employees. Right. We've got statistics around that. What best practices could we give or ideas could we give to our folks on the line with us about how can they help their managers make this become an integral part of what they do on a day-to-day, and that they can really see the impact that they make as a manager? Any initial thoughts on that?
Well, it goes back to that. There's that simple saying, we manage what we measure. If a manager isn't aware that they have such an impact on these onboarding experiences or any of these lifecycle services, then they're not likely to take ownership and actively drive it. So having some metrics and having the conversation and being able to point very clearly, and because of this, we're getting this outcome. That's the start. Awareness, then we move to action and accountability. But just getting that awareness piece is the starting of that conversation.
Well, guys, we do have a couple of questions that have come in that we haven't been able to address while we were talking. Some of them, just to go back, might have missed the beginning part. Talk about the timeline in administering the onboarding survey. You know, is it done at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? Right. Kind of just readdress that. That was a question that came up. Let's just make sure we cover that again.
Yeah, and our standard approach is to do it at 90 days. And we like 90 days because people have had enough opportunity to assimilate, to learn some things, to kind of get out of that first month halo that they're in, and be able to objectively assess the process as it's been administered.
That's the sweet spot. Our default is not to recommend multiple, you know, increments. Let's hit them once in the right with the right instrument at that key 90 days. That said, we want to understand our organizational needs. The beauty of this, relative to like an engagement survey or something, these are easy to set up. It's not a lot of work to get your portal up. We don't need a complete employee list just because of the nature of how these are initiated. They're easy to set up for an organization and get them up and running very quickly. And then ongoing maintenance and management is very straightforward too. It just lives with your organization. You can launch them whenever you need to. So there's it's a simple setup, and it's a big win in terms of what you get back for data.
And because we ask our engagement questions, engagement-specific questions on an onboarding survey, how can this data tie over or correlate to the larger engagement survey that an organization might run?
So, and I think what we're doing here is trying to identify, so an engagement survey happens at one point in time, and so you do have people that have been there for 90 days when you run the engagement survey, but this is giving us data from everybody in the organization at their 90-day mark. So it can help us to understand, you know, where they are at that point. Now, there's other surveys we can run at the one-year mark or two-year, we call stay surveys, or we call re-onboarding surveys, things like that, that we can do run at different times. But it can help us, it can help us by just understanding what that experience has been like in the first 90 days, and it's only the first 90 days, and we can run it accordingly.
Additionally, we continue to track tenure bands and engagement surveys, so we can see these folks that you onboarded, how are they progressing throughout the years in your organization?
That's true.
This key group that we know, we've created this onboarding experience, where are they 5 years out? And so it adds to just our understanding of the journey we're creating for employees.
That's great. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. As mentioned earlier, we will do a more in-depth webinar on exit surveys. We need to plan our summer calendars. It gets a little bit crazy for July, but either in July or August, we'll work to get that webinar out for engagement surveys as well. I also just want to say for anyone that's on the line that if you would like to experience the tool that we showed the screenshots of, just email us at info@decisionwise.com or reach out to us if you have a contact at DecisionWise, and we would be glad to give you a demo of what this tool would look like and let you see what that might be. So thank you all for attending, and we look forward to having you on future webinars. Again, for those who completed the webinar and want the Sherman HRCI credits, we will be emailing those out this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.